You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can find information about becoming a member there as well. And look for old shows. We call those podcasts. So if you're interested in topics that you're not sure if we've covered before, you can go through those on WDIY.org and listen at your leisure. Today is November 13th, 2013. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 15,821, the S&P at 1782, and the NASDAQ at 3965. Tonight we're doing listeners' questions. So if you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We had a few come in on email, so I'll take care of those once we get going here. And then I have had a few come in from clients that have asked me questions that I think were applicable, and I thought I could share those generally as well. Last week, I did want to give a thank you to Aji Abraham, who was Senior VP of Business Development at Capital Blue Cross, and he came on, did a great show. We talked about the Capital Blue store and some of the highlights of the Affordable Care Act, and in particular, giving people power over their healthcare decisions and understanding what cost there are and asking the right kinds of questions, which in the past, because we've had insurance, we haven't been compelled to ask those questions. So there's going to be a strong drive to have people participate in their healthcare decisions and your healthcare education and being aware of what things are costing and participating in that a little bit more than we have in the past. So I think that's all good things. We're moving in the right direction, despite some of the other hiccups that are going along the way. It would always be a good idea to be aware of cost, you know, what your options are. So again, tonight we're talking about listeners' questions. So if you do have them, you can call in. Judy Ann is here. She'll answer your calls, take your information, ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without confusion, without the delay, and we can talk live on air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you could just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll jot it down and bring it to me in the studio. And while I typically, you know, have topics each week, tonight it's kind of whatever. It's your night. It's listeners' questions. I decided to do that because I was away at a conference. And in fact, I like literally just ran into the studio. So I have like had no planning behind tonight. So if you have questions, just give us a call and I'm happy to take them. If I run out of questions, I can, you know, throw in some tax information. But usually the questions end up being around taxes, interestingly enough. You know, I love talking about estates. So if you have questions about estate planning, inheritance tax, I do like talking about that. And the reason is, I think, because I feel that people think it's complicated. It can be complicated. I think people are afraid to talk about it. So it's always my goal to try to make that easier, an easier conversation for people, give you the tools you need to move yourself forward in any of your estate planning, etc. So the question can be whatever. If I can't answer it, I'll tell you. So again, questions 610-758-8810 or through yourfinancialchoices.com. So one of the first questions I had received, and I said I would answer this right away, this person's busy, has things to do. A 63-year-old had said they were getting ready to retire. They have a 401k account at work and is trying to decide what to do with that money once they're retired. They're worried they might have to draw on the account for income because they have Social Security coming in and pension money coming in, but they think they might need a little bit of this 401k money to help supplement their cash flow, their cash needs. And their concern was they didn't want to dip into the principal. And I hear that quite a bit. People, especially an older generation, will have this idea of not touching principal. So a few items let me highlight. There's an age, 63, not retired yet. 401k, money there, may have to tap it. They also are talking about Social Security and pension. So just a bunch of things start coming at me and hitting me. It's like you're driving down the road in a snowstorm and the snowflakes are coming at you. So when I read synopsis like this, all these ideas start coming. So a few things I'm just going to start with. My first question would be to this person, what are you going to do when you retire? So when we talk about, you know, what are we going to do with a 401k when we retire, not knowing what to do with that 401k, there are some other questions around that. But the first thing I might say is, what are you going to do? Sometimes people think there's a magical age they have to retire. Maybe you don't have to retire. Maybe you're so stressed out you have to just for your own well-being. We're seeing longer life expectancies. We're seeing people live a lot longer. So frankly, unless the job is killing you, you know, a lot of times I'll tell folks, well, maybe you just keep working a little bit longer. Sometimes maybe you could talk to your employer about working part-time. Maybe you have one of those jobs that could have some flexible hours, kind of get the best of both worlds for everybody, the best for the employer, the best for you, best for, you know, cash flow. Sometimes folks will continue doing consulting after they've retired. So my first question would be, what are you going to do? Let's say you don't want to work. You don't anticipate any additional income coming in. One of the first things you need to do then before you even think about retiring is take an inventory. I've talked about this several times. If you go back to prior podcast, you can find a show I think I did on taking an inventory. I have an Excel spreadsheet available for that. And that inventory includes taking a picture of what assets you have, what kind of cash flow you have, what expenses you expect, so that you know what you can project out that you can rely on. You also mentioned that you have a pension. We'd want to know what that pension's going to look like. And if you actually have an option of when to retire, maybe you could push it out a little bit further. What impact does that have on your pension? Do you have an option of taking a lump sum on a pension, or do you have to take the monthly amount? Okay, Social Security. If you delay taking Social Security, you increase your benefit a little bit. So those are options, you know, we would have to know what those numbers look like. Again, back to, let's say it's already written, you have to retire, you're going to retire at 63. Then we would know what the Social Security was. We would know what the pension would be. We want to know what your cash flow is going to look like. How are you spending money? What do you plan to do in retirement? And then we decide, okay, what are you going to do with your 401k? Your 401k can sometimes stay at the employer. It's up to you whether you think that's a good idea or not. Sometimes the underlying expenses within the 401k, they might be lower with your employer plan. They might not be. You want to do a little research on that. So if your employer allows you to leave the 401k at work, that's an option. I would say probably the majority of people roll it over to an IRA, and it's called an IRA rollover. It's an individual retirement account of which you have more control over the underlying investments in which you put it in. So you would have to decide what custodian is going to hold that IRA. Are you going to work with someone to manage that IRA for you, or are you going to do it yourself? And then once you do it, how do you structure the underlying investments in that to meet your goals? And your goals would be, if you anticipate having to take money out of that IRA to help with that cash flow with your pension, your Social Security, what kind of distribution are you going to need on that? You have to remember that some of this might be taxable. The other thing I wanted to point out was when you thought you might need some of that money to help your cash flow, many people forget when they retire that they're not going to be paying Social Security tax. They're not going to be paying state income tax on their pension, their IRA distributions, their Social Security. There's no local income tax. So a lot of the taxes that you were paying while you were working, which affected your cash flow, you're not going to have once you retire. So be aware of your cash flow might look very different when you retire. You might not be driving as much. You might not have the dry cleaning bills. So when you asked for advice on what to do with the 401k, I think there are a whole bunch of questions that you might need to ask or answer for yourself before you'll know for sure what you should do with the 401k. Bottom line, I could give you a very easy answer. You could roll it over to a IRA. Or you could keep it in your employer plan and only take it out as you need it. And that is something I'll add too. Sometimes you might take out $1,000. Maybe you could take out more. Just understand that there's income tax consequences on any distributions from the 401k or a rollover IRA. All right. So do an inventory of your assets. See what other assets you have and what kind of income flow they might give you. Understand what your Social Security is going to give you, your pension is going to give you. Do you have decisions to make before you irrevocably make an election on either of those? Know what that is. Know what you're going to do in retirement as to what your cash flow needs are going to be. So, person who asked this question, they don't want me to use their name. I think you know who you are. Hopefully you've had a chance to listen to the answer. I strongly suggest doing that inventory first and just kind of sitting for a little bit, making sure you know what you're going to need. And then you can adjust your portfolio, your IRA, to maybe help accommodate that a little bit. And when you look at earnings and saving principle, you want to look at total return. What kind of total return are you going to get on your portfolio as far as growth and or dividends or interest? It's not just the income. It could also be growth as part of your return that you might need. Okay, so I hope that answered your question. I hope you have fun out at your event tonight that you're doing. Okay, thanks. So we have another caller. We have yes, Jeff, are we on? Do we have Kathy on the line?
You do.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Hi, Lori. I'm fine.
Good. How can I help you?
I have a question regarding a teacher retirement account that I have in Pennsylvania. I'm no longer living in Pennsylvania, and some of my money is no longer accruing any interest. It's about a $20,000 account, and I have the choice of cashing it out and paying a 20% tax or rolling it over into an existing 301B.
A 403B?
So.
A 403B?
I'm sorry, 403B, yes.
Okay.
I was working for a nonprofit, yes.
Okay.
So my question is, and I also have a lot of debt, so my question is it smarter for me to take my losses in 20% tax and pay down a nice chunk of my debt or to just roll it over? And if I do pay the tax and take the payout, will I also be taxed as that remaining amount, will that be income for the next that tax year?
Kathy, how old are you?
I'm going to be 55 in January.
Okay.
And I'm a teacher.
Okay. First of all, if you were to take a distribution out of this retirement plan, you would not only have the income tax, despite what they're telling you about that 20% federal tax, that's just their basic withholding. They have no idea what income tax consequence you'll have one way or another.
Okay.
The rule is they're just going to take out 20% or 25%, whatever it is. So that isn't what the actual tax is. That's just what they're, you know, telling you they're going to take.
So it's like an estimate.
Yes, yes. And they're usually required to do that unless you can tell them otherwise. So your income tax on that distribution actually is going to be the income tax at whatever tax bracket you happen to be in, you know, whatever marginal tax bracket. It
okay.
might be 25% without telling me any of your income. If you're married, if you're single, depending on how much you're making now, it might be taxed at 15%. It might be taxed at 25%. But the issue is if you take money out of a retirement account before age 59 and a half, and sometimes we can get away with age 55, but not in your case, I can tell already, there's also a 10% penalty. So
okay.
that, yeah, so I just would not recommend it. I would
okay,
not recommend
that's
it. Yeah.
Okay.
And the other thing is unfortunately, I think in Pennsylvania, this wouldn't have been taxable to you in Pennsylvania. And you live where now?
I live in West Virginia.
Yeah, I'm not sure if West Virginia, I don't know if I've ever done a West Virginia return as I'm thinking this through. Some states piggyback off what the federal return looks like, and the federal will tax your retirement account for sure. And if West Virginia piggybacks off the federal, then your retirement account will be taxable in West Virginia as well.
Okay.
There's sometimes, occasionally, I think Virginia has a little exception. If you had an employer plan in another state, West Virginia might have that. I'm not going to say off the top of my head. I'd have to look that up. So it might not just be income tax consequences and 10% penalty for early withdrawal for federal. It could also be state income taxes. So let's pretend you're going to work in West Virginia for another 10 years and retire.
Well, I actually work in Virginia.
Oh, you work in Virginia. Okay.
I work in Virginia, but I live in West Virginia.
Oh, you're going to have a little bit of a complicated return.
It's too expensive to live in Virginia.
Well, if you end up retiring and coming back to Pennsylvania, your retirement account won't be income taxable. So usually the also offer that option of the rollover, which you mentioned. So you would roll it over to an IRA, and it gets rolled over to an IRA. And there are options to get money out of the IRA and avoid a 10% penalty. And those options, there's certain exceptions. And one of them would be if you set up like an, it's called a 72T calculation, where you take out substantially equal periodic distributions based on your life expectancy at the time you started and the account value, it wouldn't give you enough money to pay off your debt. So for the debt, I would start by looking at your highest debt, you know, cost, get that taken care of.
Yeah, I'm working on that already, and I've actually already eliminated some of it.
Great. And also you could call the companies.
I've spoken to a debt counselor, yes.
Very good. You call them, you ask if they'll negotiate.
Mm-hmm. It's a service offered through my employer.
Oh, very good. Very good. That's good. And it's going to be empowering when you're done with that. So I'm very happy to hear that you're doing that. But I would probably not take the cash out, and even if you roll it over, I would not probably take any money out of the IRA either. Those exceptions are a little bit hard to get, and you could have a 10% penalty out of there as well. So
gotcha.
Okay,
thank you so much. I appreciate
it. All right, thank you for calling. Good luck.
Take care.
Bye-bye. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with listeners' questions. 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. The time now is 6:20 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, tonight, the topic, listeners' questions. I really appreciate that call from West Virginia. That was fun. I'm happy to have people listening from far and wide. They must be listening online. So thank you very much. And that is a good point. People can listen online at wdiy.org. You don't have to be in our listening area with the beauty of the internet. So if you have friends or family who may not get our signal, you can always tell them, go online, wdiy.org, and click listen online. I wanted to do one little follow-up to that question that I started the show with about the question about having a 401k where someone works and they retire and what should they do with it. And I said, you know, usually we see people rolling it over to an IRA, but the question was much more than that. It was also, you know, what if I need it for cash flow and things like that. And I said, you really have to know what you're going to do in retirement as to how much you might need to supplement, but also looking at how do you invest, because if you want to make a little money to supplement your cash flow, you do need to pay attention to the underlying investments that you're using in the different kinds of accounts you have. Let me just point that out. When you have an IRA or an annuity, the income that comes out of those is ordinary income. It doesn't matter what you invest in the underlying investments. It all is going to come out as ordinary income. If you have money outside of retirement accounts, you just have a brokerage account and you have a bank account. Bank accounts pay interest sometimes, but bank accounts, when they pay interest, it also is ordinary income. But if you have investments in equities, mutual funds that are, you know, basically equity based, you know, so I'm talking about stocks here, mutual funds, stocks that pay dividends, if they're qualified dividends, they qualify for a lower tax rate. That's very important, especially for people who are going into retirement. They're not working, they're not making as much. Maybe sometimes that's not the case. But when you lower your income, you may qualify for zero tax rate. If you're in a 15% tax bracket and you have qualified dividends or capital gains, they may qualify for a zero tax rate. So you really want to pay attention to how you have the different kinds of accounts that you have invested. So if you're someone who knows you want some bonds and you know you want some equities, you want to look to see, where do you have the bonds? Are they in your IRA? Because those are going to get taxed as ordinary income anyway. And you have your equities in the accounts that are going to give you the best tax advantages. So that's tax efficient, tax advantage kind of investing. So just be aware of that. That was just another little comment I had. If there are questions this evening, it's listener questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I had another question come in, and it's a complicated story, and there is a lot going on in it. And I actually just picked it up right before I came into the show. So I didn't get to do any research on this for my caller. I'll just say Shelley. I didn't get to do a lot of research on this, so I will do my best to see if I can help. Unfortunately, Shelley lost her job in May without a lot of notice from a Lehigh Valley employer. And Shelley, I'll just mention, I had a friend who lost a job from a big Lehigh Valley employer at the same time in May, and also probably doing well in their salary. So I'm just wondering if it's the same kind of job that you both lost, and it was very, very unfortunate and with not a lot of notice. So your issue was, though, that you have three children, two adult children and one that's 7 years old, and that you had a home, you were paying your mortgage, you were doing just fine. All of a sudden you lose your job, and now you're without a job, and you also have to go find another job with a 7 year old and find a job that's going to pay you enough to make your mortgage. And you were able to find work, it looked like, but almost half of what you were making before, probably in desperation. So you're asking for some kind of guidance and input on what can someone do when they lose their job, have a mortgage. You talked to the mortgage company, you asked for some, you know, slack on the payments, and they did help you a little bit. What I don't know from the email is whether or not you worked through one of the government programs, you know, with the crisis, or if any of that is still available. I haven't had a chance to research it. But if you go on HUD.gov, H-U-D as in David, .gov, there may be some information there that will be helpful to you about different plans. I think there was something called the UP program for unemployed people. So now you're no longer unemployed, but maybe the program might still apply. See if that would help, if that wasn't what you have already done. The other thing I would mention, now that you at least are employed, maybe now you could use this for leverage to go look for a position similar to what you had had before, where you could start making as much money as you were before. You said it would be difficult for you to get a second job, though you could, but you have a 7-year-old and you want to spend time with them. You also mentioned the adult children. I don't know if they're around, and I'm guessing they're not. Otherwise, my default would be your other children need to step up and help as part of a family and help care for your 7-year-old, or get a job and help pay bills, or move back home and help pay bills. That's how I would do it. I mean, I would probably first check HUD.gov, talk to your mortgage company, say what programs are available for unemployed people. How can they just kind of help you get over this bump? You've already started using your 401k money. Unfortunately, what's going to happen there is you're going to have some big income tax due, because if you've had to take money out of the 401k and you're under age 59 and a half, you're going to have some taxes and some 10% penalty problems. Looking at any exceptions, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I don't think there's going to be any exceptions to that 10% penalty. So you may have an income tax problem as well. So trying to look for help in as many ways as you can is what you're going to need to do. So start with HUD.gov, then the mortgage company, go back to them, see if there were any programs under the Obama administration that might help with unemployed people if they haven't expired, if you could still apply for it. Talk to your kids, tell them your situation, see if anyone's available to move back home. I'm telling you, when my father had a stroke, there were six kids in our family. I had a brother quit his master's program. He actually just put it on a pause, came, moved back home. He was home for about a year. Then my husband and I moved home for a year and helped out. So good luck. I hope you get some resolution to all of this. I hope you can find another job that pays you enough money to be able to stay in your home. Jeff, we have a caller on line one. Okay. Nick, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. How can I help you?
My name is Nick. I'm actually looking at just some guidance, I should say. I mean, I'm 30, just got recently married. Just trying to point myself in the right direction for future investments to make sure that me and my wife are stable. As of right now, I have, give or take, about 25 grand in a nest egg that we've been building up.
Good job.
And I'm kind of curious on, I don't want to say what I should do with it, but should I start investing now? I have a 401k through my work. I also have a stockholders program that they do. At this point, I'm only giving 5% of every paycheck into my 401, mm-hmm. Along with the nest egg that we continue to build. Just kind of concerned on whether I should be investing that nest egg or just continue to build it in a savings account, knowing that a savings account is only going to be giving me pennies on nothing compared to an investment, or should I have that sitting in there just as in case money?
Okay, Nick, here's a few ideas, and I'm going to have a break. So I'm going to give you as much as I can in a minute and a half. Then you keep listening, and I'll continue if I don't get to finish, okay?
Sounds great.
So I'm going to run through a few things real fast. You're married now. Your income together, if your income together is below, let me just see if I can look this number up real quick. And don't tell me what it is. If your income's under 173,000, married filing joint, you and your wife could do a Roth IRA, and you could each put in, I think it's up to $6,000 in 2013. You could put $6,000 each into the IRA, the Roth IRA, and that is always available to you again. So you could put the money into the Roth IRA. You can always take it back out if you need it. Okay, so of your $25,000, one of the ideas, and without me seeing a whole financial plan, just take this as general advice, okay, Nick? So, so of the $25,000, we would still have $13,000, let's say, in the bank, and we'd have $12,000 in the Roth in 2013. You could invest that if you want. It depends, and we'll talk about a Roth is something that is tax-free, tax-deferred. The earnings will never be taxed if you don't take them out until, 59 and a half or later, or you never have to take them out. So you can always take out the original contribution. So to me, I love Roth IRAs because it can start you kind of saving for retirement, but it can also be accessible if you end up needing it. So now we've kind of split the pie up into, still having some cash in the bank and maybe having some money that could be used for retirement but could also be available for emergency reserves. So if we think we might still need that, then you still might need to, invest very smart. You don't want to be risky with that if we're going to still possibly use that for emergency. Okay? So that's that. But the Roth won't be taxable, but your original contributions can come out. The earnings can stay in there and never be taxed if you take it out in a qualified distribution, which is after age 59 and a half. Okay? So that's the Roth piece. Your 401k at work, if you're getting a match, I would say you want to do that first. You want to put money into your plans at work.
It's not a match.
It's not a match. So you're doing 5%. It's tax deferred. If you told me you were in a 15% tax bracket, I might say to you, gosh, Nick, maybe we don't need to do the tax deferral. You're just starting out. You're going to end up making a ton of money when you're 45 because you're so smart now. So maybe I would say, hey, Nick, does your employer offer you a Roth 401k? So I might say if you're in a 15% bracket, you and your wife together, remember you're married filing joint now, so we have to add the income up together. If you're in a 15% bracket now, I might say, gosh, you might want to think about whether you want to do a Roth 401k. If your employer doesn't offer the Roth 401k, I probably would do my Roth IRA first with cash flow, then put money into my regular 401k at work, get the tax deferral. You want to build up to about 10%. 10% going into retirement in some way.
Okay.
And at this age, if you do it now and do it early, you will be much further ahead than all your friends.
Right now we're shoving probably about 22%, give or take, into that nest egg.
Awesome.
Of both incomes.
Okay.
But at the same point, we're only renting. We're not mortgaging at this time.
Okay, well, then there you go. So that nest egg you do want to build up if you have a plan to buy. So I think you could still do the Roth and then still build up some of your nest egg. If you're not in a high tax bracket, I'm not sure about the 401k if you're not getting the match and you plan to be, you know, homeowner. You do want to get enough to, for your down payment if that's your goal.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you want to look at is how you can save money other ways in your cash flow, being careful about your spending. I will tell you, Nick, people who pay attention to how much they spend will end up with money. It is the people who do not pay attention that think they have money that don't have money.
It's interesting you say that because how we built the nest egg was we told each other we were broke. Every time we wanted something, we were broke. Even though it was building and building and building, we were broke.
That's so cute. That's a good way to do it. But you got to treat yourself once in a while too, you know. But I think that's smart. I think that's smart because you can do that when you're young. You have the energy to do that when you're young. So that all sounds good. Finding ways to help your cash flow, finding ways to save, whether it's in Roth IRAs or a nest egg for the house. A little bit in the 401k is always good, but what I wouldn't want to happen is the day you decide to go buy a house, you're taking money out of your 401k or taking a loan out of your 401k. So you've got to do a little bit of a balance, do a little bit of a both. The other thing I want to give you quick before we take our break is now that you're married, you also have to look at your estate planning, and you could be way ahead of the curve if you take care of this as well. You now have obligations to each other. You want to look at your life insurance for each other, not only your group life insurance through work, but you could get some term insurance through organizations like AAA. You can get some really...
I have both.
Okay, good. You have life insurance. You want to check your beneficiary designations now that you're married. Make sure, you know, you have each other named. Make sure you have contingent beneficiaries if you die simultaneously. You're not too young to be thinking about this. I heard a very, very sad story today. I think I'll start crying if I talk about it. I was at the Charles Schwab Impact Conference in D.C., and a woman was talking about, you know, how do we take care of our loved ones as they're aging? But she also talked about living in the moment as well today and cherishing everything, because when she had just had her first child after 5 years of trying, her baby was 7 months old. There was a picture of her and her husband, and 3 months later, he died in a car accident at age 25. Saddest thing. So you're never too young to make sure you plan. Now that you're married, you want to make sure you're taking care of each other, whether you're alive or not. Have life insurance, have a will, have beneficiary designations on your on your retirement accounts and on your life insurance. And then if both of you are gone, who would get it? Nick's might go to his mom and your wife's might go to her mom or your siblings or whatever. So keep that in mind as well. So those are some quick tips. Did that help?
That's great. At least gives me somewhere to start pointing forward.
Okay. And tracking things helps. Don't be a nut about it, you know, like an engineer or anything, but
right. It
does help to track. It gives you goals and it empowers you and it makes you feel good. So,
and as far as the kind of nest egg that I was talking about for my age with, I would say a low middle class income, mm-hmm. is that good? I mean,
I think that nest egg sounds great for your age. You want about 6 months worth of cash flow. We used to say 3 months, but frankly, I think it's good to have about 6 months. And you might be there or not, but some combination of that between,
very close.
You know, either your nest egg, your a Roth, and maybe even access. I don't like people using credit cards unless they pay them off every month, but that also gives you a little bit of access if you need a little wiggle room. So, okay.
Great.
All right, Nick,
thank
great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. We're going to take our quick break. We'll be back in just a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, local public affairs programming, and an outstanding mix of hand-picked music. Folks, the time now is 6:38. Now back to our program.
Thank you, Jeff. If you have questions this evening, that's what we're doing. Questions, 610-758-8810. And we've had great questions tonight. I do want to follow back up. I hope Shelley's still listening because I kind of cut the answer to her question off a little bit because I knew I had someone on the phone and we were coming up to break. So Shelley, hopefully you're still listening. We had mentioned, you know, you're running into a situation, you have a mortgage, you lost your job, you luckily found something else, but it, you know, about half the salary. So trying to make ends meet with a child at home, you're a single mom. I had mentioned the website HUD.gov to see if there might be some programs that would apply to you. But you had also asked about a short sale or foreclosure. I've probably worked on like one or maybe one of these, you know, in all these years. I will say that the short sale, I think, does not look as bad as the foreclosure. The foreclosure, if someone's buying a foreclosure, it goes faster than a short sale, you think? Short sales, someone else is buying your house. I think the foreclosure, the bank takes the house back. So there's different consequences to that. The foreclosure, you could end up having income. You probably wouldn't because there is an exception to reporting the foreclosure as income. Oh, I think Shelley's on the line. So on line one. Hello, Shelley. Can you hear me?
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you? Wow. Did you hear me say I was coming back to the rest of your question?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. What? And then as I was calling in, I was like, oh, she's getting to the rest of my question.
Yes, yes. yeah, because I thought I had to get someone who was on the line, and I thought, oh, I'll come back to this. But tell me, are you in healthcare without giving anything away?
No.
Oh, okay. I knew someone who was a nurse who lost her job in May, and I thought, oh my gosh, they got Shelley too. Anyway.
No, I was in the industrial gases business.
Okay. Okay.
That should tell you the other company that I worked for.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
There's two big ones, and So no, I was let go from Air Products, and I was there for 8.5 years.
Oh, that's so sad.
And so I had a very nice salary there.
Mm-hmm.
The field I was in, I was an inside sales rep,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm in sales now, but my salary is like half of what it was.
Yeah. They're taking advantage of that situation. Well, I'm sorry that that happened to you. I hope that something else will work out. You know, I just told someone else today that who had lost a job. I said, sometimes we don't understand what we are we don't understand why we're going through something until we're on the other side of it. So maybe you're not on the other side of it, but maybe something wonderful will end up turning out. So, you know, I hope it works out. But did the mortgage people, when you talked to them, did they go through any of the government programs that might be out there? Because it didn't look to me like your mortgage went down that much.
It went down only $300 and odd. That's it. It was like $1,485, and now it's like $1,100. And they basically did a loan modification for me.
Yeah.
Based on my income. So they modified it, and they said it was only temporary. So they may, you know, decide to kick it back up.
And did they say that was under any of the programs? I'm not familiar, and I didn't have time to research this because I literally picked this up right as I was walking into the studio. Did they say it was any of the government programs that were out there at all?
No, they didn't.
I wonder if you would have been eligible for something that they didn't disclose to you. So, you know, if you're smart, I would do a little homework myself if I were you on HUD.gov. You know, HUD.gov, and look up something. It's the UP plan. I think it's unemployed program. So for unemployed people. Now, you're no longer unemployed, but were you unemployed for a period of time?
I was unemployed for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
It wasn't that long because I was like petrified that I didn't have a job. So I spent all of my time just trying to find another job. And I basically took the first job that came along that was at least a reasonable salary, because a lot of companies around here are paying like $12 or $13 an hour. And I was like, okay, that's not going to work.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes too, you could also start looking for another job while you're employed at least. So I would.
I am doing that.
Yeah.
I am. I'm still looking.
Could your older kids help at all? Did you hear me answer part of that? Where could the older kids come home and help?
I did. You know, both of my daughters are. They both just finished school, mm-hmm. and they're both working, and they both have their own places mm-hmm. with friends. And so they're kind of in a situation where they have apartment leases and things like that. And, I mean, I know they feel really bad, and that situation could change at some point in time. Like, they could end up coming home and helping me out, but right now, that's not a possibility.
Are they local?
They are, yes. Mm-hmm.
And are they clearing extra money each month? Like,
They both have student loans that they're, you know, that they're mm-hmm. responsible for paying back, mm-hmm. and you know, their own apartment expenses and everything. So they don't have. I know they don't have very much money, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, they've worked really hard to, you know.
Well, sure, you worked really hard to raise them.
I know.
I think, let me just say that sometimes parents are shy about telling their children things and being vulnerable and telling them they're in this kind of situation or, you know, hot spot. But sometimes, you know, you have to have those kind of family conversations. And if at such time the kids would be available to help out, you know, even if they gave you, I mean, I know it's going to, you know, it almost sounds it sounds a little sad, but it's true that I told my mother, she felt bad when we had to help them. And I said to my mother, we are your dividends. We are your dividends and we are paying you back. And, you know, I frankly was very independent from the age of 12. So, I mean, it's not like I put myself through college and everything, but I still didn't care.
Too, my parents didn't have a lot of money. I've always worked very hard to put a life together for myself and you know, kind of do for myself. And I've raised my kids pretty much, you know, mm-hmm. well, for a number of years now.
Yeah.
You know, as a single parent. And, it's just,
It's tough. You're just in a situation, but you got to visualize all good, positive things and move towards those. So try to get what resources you can, checking out HUD.gov, see if there are other options for you that maybe the bank didn't tell you about. So that's would trouble me.
They're not the most helpful. I mean, it's Wells Fargo, and they're not the most helpful people to work through these issues with. I mean, it took them forever just to put through a loan modification. So the months that I was waiting for that to go through, I was still like having to pay the full amount. And mm-hmm. I was telling them, you know, I can't keep doing this. You have to really work with me because I'm exhausting like all of my savings just to, you know, keep paying this. It's
Are
ridiculous.
You near a college at all that you could take in a renter? Because that's
I live in Bethlehem. And yeah. So, I mean, I'm close by. You know
Lehigh, sometimes you could,
Moravian.
Sometimes you could contact the colleges, especially with a new semester starting in January. If you could just get through the next few months, sometimes you could maybe take in a graduate student who needs a place to stay and charge, you know, $300 a month or $400 a month. And that might be enough to kind of get you through until you get past this. The other thing is you want to look and see if there are any other programs because you have a child, you know, if you have insurance needs and things like that, there's the CHIP program. And, you know, I'm sure there's other social service kind of agencies. I'm just not familiar with them without looking that up. So,
yeah.
And then as far as a short sale is an option. A short sale, though, someone has to be willing to buy it.
Yeah.
And then the bank has to be willing to accept it. So sometimes that process can take a little while. It probably is better for your record than a foreclosure, but I'm not sure if one or the other is better. The idea with the foreclosure is it's like a forgiveness of loan, and then that could inure income to you, which could be a problem, but if someone is insolvent, meaning you don't have any assets, then it's not going to end up being income. We go through a worksheet and look to see. So quite often in these situations, even if there were income that was deemed to be given to you through a foreclosure, it's like cancellation of debt kind of a thing. People don't realize that maybe. Sometimes it could end up being income on your tax return. If you're insolvent, it doesn't, it won't be taxable. So there's a calculation for that. So I would say one or the other, probably whatever would be easier or faster if you feel the need that nothing else is going to work out and you have to get out quick.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm not that desperate, but I know that, you know, each month I'm tapping into my savings and that's going to run out eventually.
Right.
I just don't know if it's worthwhile for me to continue to use my savings for this purpose if I'm not going to be able to afford it when it's, you know, 6 months from now and I'm still in the same situation and I'm still making $35,000 and not $70,000.
There's another organization that has a local office in Whitehall. It's called Money Management International. And they have a website, and they're a nonprofit, and they might be able to help you run through some options, especially when you're still a little bit ahead of it. And their website, I think, is moneyinternational.org. They used to be the Credit Counseling Center of the Lehigh Valley, and they merged with Money Management International. So it's Money managementinternational.org or moneyinternational.org.
Okay.
Just look up Money Management International, Google it, and they have a Whitehall office. So check with them too, okay? Well, good
Wonderful.
Luck, Shelley. I'm sorry. All this happened.
Thanks for your help. I appreciate
it. Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Folks, questions, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. If you have questions, we are live. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she will bring it in. I had a few other questions that came through from clients and I thought they were applicable and I would share them. And then if I have time at the end, I'm going to just go over a few changes in tax rates and taxes for 2013 in case people weren't aware of them. And you need to do tax planning because it could seriously affect you if you're a high net worth individual or high income on page one. You could kind of get surprised. I did have a high net worth client call or email and said that they were changing their portfolio around and looking at asset allocation. I do their taxes. I don't do their portfolio. So they were changing their portfolio, asset allocation. They were wondering if they should consider tax-exempt securities. Tax-exempt securities, we're talking municipals usually. And in this situation, the client's in California. So in order for tax-exempt securities to get the benefit of the most benefit from tax savings, you usually would want to buy exempt municipals in your state of residence if you wanted the federal exemption and the state exemption. So if I live in Pennsylvania and I buy California municipals, they will be taxable in Pennsylvania. So a lot of times people think tax-exempt income for federal is tax-exempt income for everywhere, and it's not. I'm not sure Pennsylvania is good about catching this, but it's definitely something they should look at when they're trying to raise revenue. So the idea being you invest in Pennsylvania, they're going to give you the tax exempt when you're investing in Pennsylvania municipals. If you're investing in California municipals, that's building up California's economy, so they're not going to give you a tax exemption in Pennsylvania. So, you know, the question, the theory that kind of goes around deciding if someone should get municipals or not, you know, if they're comfortable with them. She was looking for tax implications. So that's what I was, you know, looking to answer. Tax implications. If you buy munis in the state you reside, they would be exempt from federal and state. What they are also going to be exempt from in this person's case is the net investment income tax. And that is for folks who are making over $200,000 if they're single, or $250,000 if you're married filing joint on page one. There is a net investment income surtax to the tune of 3.8% on investment income over those amounts. It's the lower of, okay? So in this case, tax exempt munis are not part of page one income and would not be subjected to that net investment income tax. So in this case, this story, this person, if they are comfortable with municipals, and that's between them and their advisor, they would get a tax benefit, federal, state, and net investment income. Okay. I don't know if we have time for questions still, but you could always send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com as well. But 610-758-8810. There was also a question, should a client defer earnings or a bonus commission into next year? So sometimes we have people who may be able to defer a bonus, you know, because they, you know, work at a company that kind of gives them the option. Do you want the bonus now? Do you want the commission now? Or do you want to wait? So the question was, should this person defer? In the old days, people would always say, it's always better to defer income because then you can defer paying the tax and you have the money, defer claiming income because you can defer the tax on it and you'll have that money a little bit longer that you'd pay the tax on. This is actually receiving a bonus, receiving income. The option would be this person takes it in December or they take it in January. So we're not talking about a big difference in whether they take it now or later, you know, because later is just another month. The question might say, well, if I had the money now, I could invest, I could make more money, but, you know, they'd also have to pay tax. In this situation, I have someone who is thinking, you know, every year there's a debate about whether this person should retire or not. So I say, if all things being equal, if we're going to be in the same income tax bracket, why not defer it until January? Because if this person tells me they want to retire in June, then the income tax rates will come down by virtue of that early retirement. They're not going to make as much money. Income tax rates come down, and this person would save a lot of money. So all things being equal, I say defer it another month, you know, you take it in January, and then we might have more planning options available next year. Okay. I had a question come in. Someone had a pension plan from a prior employer, and they received a notification. This is actually a local employer. They received a notice saying, you know, you used to work here years and years ago. There's this pension sitting here in our books. We're going to give you the option to take a little bit now, you know, a little payment every year now, or you take, you could have the option to take a lump sum out now. And with that lump sum, if you take it out, it's all income taxable. And a lump sum is the present value of the future stream of monthly payments in a pension, okay? That's what a lump sum is. It's the present value of a future stream of monies they were expected to pay you. And it's based on certain interest rates and your age and things like that. So this person was given the option to take the lump sum or to annuitize, take a monthly amount. Well, interest rates are so low now that the lump sum option actually would be higher today than if he waited to take the pension over future years if interest rates were to go up. So you have to pay attention to when you're trying to make these decisions. It's not always a yes or no. You really need to look at the circumstances that you're dealing with at the time, whether what is your life expectancy? What are the monthly amounts we're talking about? What is the lump sum amount? What interest rates are they using? How is it calculated? What tax rate are you in? What age are you? So you want to consider all of the options, lay them out on the table, side-by-side comparison, and see what makes sense to you. So in this case, the lump sum was a higher amount today than we would have expected he would get over time if interest rates were to go up. So a little complicated, but those are the kinds of questions we get. We have still just a couple minutes. Let me go over those tax changes because I said if I had a couple minutes, I would try to do that. Real quick, tax area, ordinary income taxes, the details, highest marginal rate increases from 35% to 39.6%. That's an increase of 4.6%. Who's affected? Taxpayers with taxable income over $400,000 if you're single and $450,000 if you're married filing joint. Capital gains and dividend taxes, 15%. 20% if you're in the highest tax bracket. So if you're someone in that 39.6% bracket, we're talking someone making a lot of money, $400,000 or $450,000 or more, the rate could go up to 20%. Those same people are going to be affected by that net investment income tax I was telling you about. It was called the Medicare surtax on net investment income. If you're making that much money, your net investment income, if it exceeds the $200,000 or $250,000 thresholds for that tax, will also be subject to another 3.8%. So people who are making, you know, over $250,000 will have the Medicare net investment income tax, but people who are making over $400,000 single, $450,000 married filing joint, will have a higher capital gains tax rate and the Medicare surtax. The higher capital gains rate would only be on those amounts over $400,000 or $450,000. The Medicare surtax is on those amounts $200,000 or $250,000 higher. Payroll tax, additional Medicare tax, 0.9%, not a huge amount, but that's on salaries over $200,000 single, $250,000 married filing joint. Phase out of itemized deductions for people making over $300,000 married filing joint, $250,000 single. Itemized deductions and personal exemptions are getting phased out again. Itemized deductions years ago were phased out. We took away that and started phasing out the phase out. All came back. We could deduct all our itemized deductions. No phase out. Guess what? 2013, it's back, but for people making over $300,000 married filing joint, $250,000 single. Itemized deductions, another note, medical expenses, 10% threshold. So if you're someone who's filed returns for years, you itemize deductions and you always get the medical deduction because your income's so low and your medical deductions are so high. If you're under 65, the threshold, the limitation went from 7.5% to 10%. So you could be affected by that. If you're over 65, it's still 7.5%, but they're going to phase that out as well. So those are the quick tidbits. If you still need time to make a charitable contribution, you're over age 70 and a half, don't forget about the qualified charitable distribution. You can do it through your IRA, have it count as your minimum required distribution. don't have to report the income on page one. It's a great thing. Next week, we are talking about being thankful, grateful, and giving back because it's almost Thanksgiving and I'm not going to be here on Thanksgiving. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. Stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers. What do I say? Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.